Members, we're going to get started. We can't call the meeting officially to order yet because we don't have a quorum, but... Representative Norton, for the record, said all the important people are here. I agree. Show up on time, right? All right, members, we're going to begin with House File 1918. Representative Dean. You are up. And I will move that... I can't move it yet because we don't have a quorum. That's right. All right. Very good. We'll get started with it anyway. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate your time. I know that you have a lot on your agenda today as we are approaching deadline week. I also want to say hi to a lot of the lobbyists and folks who are in my old stomping grounds. It's good to be back in the health care committee. The bill that I have before you on 1918 seeks to answer a question, which is what are we going to do in the future in the state of Minnesota for our state-based health care programs if we have significant changes in the federal delivery of health care, particularly the ACA, particularly if we have a repeal of the ACA. How does that affect our state-based programs? How would that affect the delivery of care in the state of Minnesota? What would we do in such an instance? And what this does is it simply indicates and directs the departments of health and DHS to begin working on that, to look at our state-based programs, and to say that if, in fact, there is a successful repeal of the ACA, how would we deliver care currently dependent on that? And more importantly, one of the things that I always looked at is what is the relationship between state-based programs and federal health care and federal health care dollars as we're looking at delivery of health care in the state of Minnesota. And to the extent that they are connected, to the extent that we are dependent on that, on not just those dollars, but also on the strings that come with them, is definitely going to be an issue in being able to provide high-quality, affordable care in the state of Minnesota through our state-based programs. And so that is the purpose for the bill and moving forward. It has directed a deadline of December of 2012, which will comply with and provide timing for the 2013 session for legislators as we come back to provide us with a bit of a roadmap on how to deal with federal health care changes. It may be, in fact, that there is no repeal, that things are going to be continuing along as they are, in which case we will probably still need to look at the relationship between state-based programs and federal-based programs as we move forward. But we need a plan, and we need to be able to start thinking about that now. And that's what this simply does and indicates that we should as we move forward. So that, Mr. Chairman, is the essence of the bill. It's a very simple bill, and it is just directing the agencies to come back with a report next December. With that, I would be happy to address any questions by the committee.
Very good. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess
As long as you're pausing, Representative Norton,
pausing, Mr. Chair. No.
We'll come right back to you. You're one of those really important people who showed up on time. That's right.
Oh, thank you.
We do have a quorum. We do have a quorum now, so I'm officially going to call the meeting to order. And I would direct the members' attention quickly to our minutes. Representative Hosh, we followed your request. If you want to take a look at the minutes, and I will entertain a motion from Representative Hosh to approve them since he asked for this. If you look on the back side, folks, the minutes for our meeting yesterday, March 13th, reflect Representative McDonald announced that it was Representative Murphy's birthday. The announcement was met with a round of applause and birthday wishes. So there you are, Representative Hosh. We put it right in the minutes.
I enthusiastically moved to approve the minutes.
Very good. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Norton, I apologize. I interrupted you, but... one more thing I'd like to do before we go further is to officially move House File.
A long pause.
It is a long pause. That'll teach you. You got to just go. Okay, I will officially move House File 1918, that it be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And now, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, as I was looking this over, the first thing that caught my attention was the significant changes language. And I guess I would ask you maybe to help me understand what significant changes are, because quite frankly, I suspect the ACA is going to have significant changes, or some changes some maybe think are significant anyway, whether the courts are involved or just as a matter of time. And so I guess I'm looking to try to understand how you're going to define significant changes. Is that any change? Is it a complete overhaul? Is it just with the Supreme Court's intervention? How are you defining that, please?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton. And the answer to that question is we don't really know yet. All of the Republican folks who are running for President Obama's job have said that they will settle for nothing less than a full-out repeal if we have less than 60 votes in the Senate. That might be something in between, even if that person is successful in becoming president. So that could mean an outright repeal. It could mean drastic funding reductions in certain areas. And I think it is fair to assume that any large change, either through defunding large portions of the ACA or an outright repeal, if that would be successful, would have dramatic changes on our state-based programs that we as a legislature are going to have to deal with through our programs. So a thoughtful thing to do might be to think, what would you do if this actually happened in the state of Minnesota, or if you truly believe, as many of us do, that this should be repealed, what if you're successful? So what if the dog catches the truck? Then what are you going to do? And the answer to that question is we better start thinking about that now rather than then.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. Well, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but woulda, coulda, shoulda. And I don't think it's necessarily particularly wise to try to legislate possibilities, because if we did that, we'd never get a bill passed. The world is filled with possibilities. And I guess as I'm looking at this, is it horribly harmful? No. Would it waste a lot of staff's time to try to guess what's going to happen, the woulda, coulda, shouldas, and make, plans for each possibility? I think the example that you gave had to do with the repeal, and I think if there's a full-out repeal, if that's what you're worried about, then I think asking the department what's your plan going to be should there be a complete repeal is one thing. I think trying for the staff to spend a lot of time spinning their wheels on trying to guess what parts will stay in and what parts will stay out, depending on who's elected and who's president, makes me a little bit nervous. So suggest you, I personally am not sure this is a wise way for us to spend our time. I understand your passion and your party's concern with the Affordable Care Act. You know, respect those differences. I just am not sure I'm comfortable asking our staff to spend a lot of time doing something based on a philosophy or a possibility.
Actually, Representative Norton, I'm very concerned about what happens in this area. This is huge, 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 huge for the state of Minnesota, not only in terms of dollars but people cared for. And I do wonder, nonpartisanly, what happens if significant portions of this are changed or modified, if we simply assume it's going to happen. But Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton. And indeed, there will be certain guideposts that happen between now and then. Anyway, there will be certain decisions that will be made. There will be a Supreme Court decision on this between the time we adjourn and the time that those of us come back. Next January, so that there will be certain decisions that will be made along the way that we're going to have to adjust to. I think it makes sense to have some policymakers thinking about that and deciding that. DHS and the Department of Health obviously will be in contact with CMS in keeping real time what's going on and obviously communicating over that period of time. But I think some legislative direction would be helpful to legislators as we come back in January of 2013 and moving forward with the next steps one way or the other.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
One final comment. I don't I understand that if things do change, our department will have to react. And I guess I would like to hope, and I guess it isn't even a hope, I know that our staff are in constant contact with the federal government. They're watching what happens, and they will react and respond to whatever comes our way as it comes our way. And to try to have them guess what the final end decision will be and spend a lot of time on it seems a waste of finances and human capital.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Majority Leader. Good to see you back in committee here. The improving economy and some changes that were made under the ACA have given us a bit more of a financial cushion than it looked like we were going to have. Our projections are a little better, and we've got, looks like our reserves are going to be filled. And I would just think that if there's concern about what might happen in the future, you know, that we would want to have those reserves just in case for any eventuality. And, you know, when people worry about losing a job, perhaps it's kind of not the right time to go out and make a new big purchase out of your savings account. You need to have, I don't know what the recommendation is now, about 3 months at least of expenses in your bank account. And it seems to me that we're right now in a pretty fortunate position, as I say, because the economy's improving, because there was money left on the bottom line at the end of the end of 2010 from that budget and some other things, that we do have some money left over. And so, but yet, your caucus is proposing to use that to pay back the school shift right now. And so I'm just wondering how you square that with the great uncertainty that everybody's worrying about here, which, you know, I think we all do need to be thinking about what's going to happen in the future. We've got a lot of uncertainties. One of them is still our economy, which is on the right course, but still kind of fragile. And so I'm wondering why you wouldn't want to keep the money in the reserves if you want to go out and spend some money to have our agencies, you know, figure out what the future is going to be. It seems to me that we, the legislature, have the opportunity to be prudent and looking forward and making sure that we can cover eventualities by keeping our reserves right now that we've been fortunate enough to fill. So what's your rationale there?
Representative Dean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, and hearing from both of the good representatives from Olmsted County, I think it's kind of appropriate that Mayo Clinic is chiming in on this because I'm sure you talk to the folks all the time, and they're very, very concerned about Medicaid spending and the future of delivery of affordable health care in particularly greater Minnesota. And no greater apprehension we might have about serving that area is health care costs in particularly greater Minnesota. And so I think it just makes sense that if we know that there is going to be a strong federal connection between Minnesota programs and the federal government, that Minnesota perhaps has more to lose than any other state based on our decades of innovation and connection with federal health care dollars, that we've become very dependent on those dollars, particularly in small rural hospitals. And those dollars, if they're a change in direction and in funding, would have probably its greatest and most acute impact on greater Minnesota, perhaps than in any other region of the country. And so when we're looking at dramatic changes, I think that it just is prudent to have a plan and to move forward with a plan for a change, and saying, well, what would we do? And I think there are those that are leading the charge nationally for healthcare reform, that it says that places like Minnesota should lead and not follow in national healthcare reform, and we should have the flexibility to innovate. And if we are well positioned to put forward plans for state-based innovation, which I think we are and we will be, that we will lead instead of be harmed by sudden changes should they happen at the federal health care law, that we could perhaps lead national reform rather than be a victim of it.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Dean, you know, Mayo did support the Affordable Care Act, and certainly I haven't heard from them that they want us to pass your bill, and I assume that they would come to me if they were interested in that. So it is a little bit ironic, you know, that you're kind of worried about the impact on Mayo and on greater Minnesota from the ACA going away, when in fact it's your party that wants it to go away. So, you know, I think there's a little disconnect here, but you didn't really address my question about our reserves, which I think, from my point of view, keeping the reserves where they are, you know, which, after all, that was put in law by the legislature. Nobody's changed that law up to this point about that there was a decision made that it was prudent to have the amount of reserves that we now do, fortunately. And I didn't really hear the answer about why we would drain those reserves when we have this big concern coming.
Sure.
Representative Dean.
I think that's probably a better question. The reserves probably for an education committee are on the House floor, and I think we're probably going to be having that debate pretty shortly and would look forward to having that debate there, which would probably be more appropriate for the committee's time. And just to the issue of partisanship, I would say that I'd probably be drafting the exact bill if I was a Democrat, because I would be worried about and concerned about what we are going to be faced with in the upcoming legislative session, with dramatic changes with how our hospitals, how our doctors, and how our facilities deliver health care in the state of Minnesota, no matter where those changes are coming from.
Okay, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think you needed to hear from another opinion from
Olmsted County.
County.
Here we go.
I want to thank you, Representative Dean, for bringing the bill forward. Just as a reminder that in the federal government, we have a $15 trillion deficit and no plan right now to begin to bend that down at all. And then today, to see that the CBO released the fact that the real cost, the 10-year cost of Accountable Care Act, is now $1.76 trillion, not the estimated $940 billion.
And Representative Benson, I would point out that memo that came out, an article on it, was forwarded to all committee members in both HHS committees. Please proceed.
So in light of those things, I think it's extremely prudent and, in fact, would be irresponsible if we didn't come up with some way to make sure that we didn't address that in the next year, rather than waiting to find out that, oops, we're in a pickle and we've got to rely on absolutely no planning, pre-planning. So I want to thank you for bringing it forward. Just a little different voice from Olmsted.
Thank you.
Very good. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to piggyback on Representative Liebling's thoughts about education and just diverge from that a little bit to let you guys all know that my Chisago Lakes girls basketball team is playing right now in the state tournament, 2 p.m., and if anyone knows the score, if you could shout it out occasionally, I'd appreciate that.
All right, let's stay on the bill.
All right.
Representative Barrett.
But with that, though, I appreciate your forward-thinking, Representative Dean. I would expect nothing less from you in a position of leadership within our party. And I'm wondering, though, if the reason for the bill, and I'm wondering if you could explain to us to what extent the department is already doing this kind of forward-thinking in preparation for something that might happen next year. Do you have any indication that they are as planful with their thoughts as you are with this bill?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett. The department does what the department, what their job is, and what their job is to implement current law. And current law says that we are implementing the ACA, and we are doing so in the state of Minnesota through early implementation of MA. And that's their job. I wouldn't expect them to theorize about what might happen down the road if certain things happen, and we wouldn't want them to. Their job is to implement current law, and that's very clear, and they're not negligent for not doing so. They're just doing their job.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to get in a fight with the Olmsted delegation, so I'll go right down the middle.
They've got us outnumbered, Representative Huntley.
This is just a comment. We will... The Supreme Court is going to hear this case for 3 days, I think next week. It's anticipated that they will announce their results in mid to late June. So we will have a long time after that should there be any changes. I happen to believe that they're probably, the Supreme Court's not going to rule against it, but who knows. In addition to that, I would say that most of the implementation of the Affordable Care Law actually starts in January of 2014. There's things you have to do earlier, but most of it really doesn't start till 2014. And obviously we're not going to know what the results of the election are going to be until November, whatever it is, 6th, 7th. So that timeline is going to be a lot shorter.
It's the 10th.
My personal view is that this is a prudent thing to do, and to look ahead and anticipate on terms of, as I said, on the Supreme Court decision, I think the department will have plenty of time after June to come up with their, if there's been any changes based by the, on the Supreme Court. Obviously, they're not going to have as much time to deal with what happens on November 10th. But I think they should be looking ahead and thinking about that. And this is a huge part of our budget. And if things change, then we should be prepared.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Just for anybody who might be watching and might be confused about the dates we're throwing around, the general election is November 6th this year. I don't want to be accused of misinforming people, so we're having some fun with the dates here, but it is November 6th. Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Prudent seems to have a different meaning for different people. I think having several times reserve that the previous caucus had is is more prudent, not less. But I also look at if this program's federally $200 billion about a year. You know, that dwarfs, if you divide it out, a lot of state budgets. And because this is the fastest growing part of the state budget, is, I think, still second for now to education as part of our budget. You know, I think the prudent thing is this has been changing. You know, as rules come out, as people actually discover what was in the bill or they think's in the bill, and that, you know, the new legislature is going to need to have an up-to-date idea so when they come in January on a budget year, which could possibly be challenging again, they have a nice, concise idea of the impact of one of the largest portions of our budget. And to me, that's prudent. This is, it's not trivial activity. I assume it's not trivial, but it's an activity that the department should already be doing anyway. So let's make sure that we're on the same page, that we, the legislature, has confidence that the information we're going to need will be present, and it'll be present in a timely fashion to help us when the, whoever is here next January to have some prep time and be all ready for that wonderful budget discussion. So I think this is a great, prudent, intelligent plan.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Majority Leader, Representative Dean, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. And you know, Representative Benson, you took some of the quotes that I was going to use also about the $1.76 trillion over the next 10 years. And I just want to remind people that although that we are facing this possible legislation becoming law, well, it is law, but I'm hoping that it'll be overruled, the Affordable Care Act. The trend, according to a Quinnipiac University poll, found that 52% of voters think Congress should repeal the law, while 39% think Congress should just let it stand as is. And the trend here is that there are people dropping off like flies with supporting this bill. They don't like the Affordable Care Act. But to my question here that I have for you, Representative Dean, is on Section 2.1, it reads, build upon and be consistent with recent state health care reform initiatives. Could you please explain what do you mean by recent state health reform initiatives, and can you define exactly what those efforts are?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson. The intent there is to talk about state-based programs for delivery of health care. So in the past, that would be Minnesota Care and General Assistance Medical Care.
Representative Franson. Hey, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief comment to address the bill, and Representative Huntley, I'm glad that you recognize that this is important as well, whether or not you like ACA or not. What it could do, the possibility I see, just being here for the last 2 years, is it could very well do what the bill states, and that is emphasize personal responsibility in involvement in making choices about health care, provide patients of health care providers with financial incentives to use and deliver health care efficiently with better outcomes, incorporate innovative ways and effective healthcare delivery approaches, and including but not limited to approaches based on defined contributions, et cetera, et cetera. So depending on how you view the ACA, this will make Minnesota, again, the leader in delivering our healthcare and taking care of those priorities that we think is the best. So I support this. Of course, who doesn't want to weigh in on such an important measure? I wanted to speak on it because if you do just look at what the bill intends that Representative Dean states in his bill, it'll make our health care even that much better. So thank you, Representative Dean.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered whether anybody from the department, either department, health or human services, is going to testify and let us know. I'd just be curious to know what kind of planning they are already doing with regard to, you know, kind of future potential changes, you know, with regard to the ACA and the Supreme Court and all that.
I think Mr. Leitz is here from the department. If you're, you or Mr. Golden or Dr. Golden, excuse me, would be willing to help us out here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Who you represent?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Leitz. I'm with the Department of Human Services. I was hoping since Mr. Golden got up first, he was going to come to the table, but unfortunately, he stepped out of the way, so I'll do this. Mr. Chair and members.
Give you some time to arm wrestle? Or
Mr. Chair and members, we, you know, obviously our focus right now is thinking about the implementation both of state-based reforms that were passed in 2008 and previously, as well as looking for opportunities that occur that that are available to us under some of the federal reform opportunities, and trying to look and take advantage of those that make sense for Minnesota in the context of the environment that we operate in. And obviously, we're planning towards the implementation of those pieces, moving forward on that. You know, we obviously understand that this is an environment that is open is a little bit in flux, just because there is some uncertainty just from a federal perspective in the courts around what the Affordable Care Act, what the outcomes will be on that. Obviously, depending upon what courts say about those pieces, we'll need to be willing and able to adjust. But again, I think many of the things that we're doing right now in terms of implementation are really building on past Minnesota efforts, whether that be building on the transparency and quality information to really do broader payment reform, changes that we're making to our public health insurance programs to make them more accountable, as well as looking at opportunities to make coverage more expansive for people who might not otherwise be able to get into that coverage. So they're not necessarily fully dependent on the federal reforms, but obviously those are a piece of it and provide us with those opportunities. So I think that's where the departments are focusing right now, and I hope that hopefully that's responsive to your question, Representative Liebling.
Mr. Leitz, do you, just a question for you. Do you have any problem with this? I mean,
Mr. Chair, I think many of the questions or many of the issues that Representative Dean has in his bill, I think are things that we would likely be looking at anyway under this context. And so in many ways, I think they flow consistently with a lot of the questions that we would like to consider or are considering currently.
Is that a no?
I guess it's not inconsistent with what we're looking at right now, Mr. Chair. You know, obviously we don't understand what, there's no definition of significant in here, but I think as the program evolves or as federal things evolve, we want to be sure that the issues that we're looking at evolve with that, and I think that the many of the issues that are laid out in the bill are ones that we likely would want to take a look at.
Very good. Thank you. We have one testifier, Ms. Braze, and I'll just ask right now if there's anybody else who wants to testify for or against the bill, for or against, if you could come down, maybe grab some seating behind the testifying table so we know you're ready. And Ms. Braze, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze, president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And I have spoken to Representative Dean about a few of our concerns about the bill, and I understand why he's looking for this. He has, after all, mentioned if there's a repeal, you know, what should the state do if there is a repeal? And so, but when we look at the actual language, it's vague. And being vague, it's open for interpretation. And particularly because it talks about the Commissioner of Human Services, Health, and Commerce, who are now all getting federal dollars to implement the exchange, even though there's no law in place. We look at this as an open way, especially where it talks about restructure and reform, you know, perhaps using those federal dollars to come up with this plan, perhaps allowing the exchange to come through as a result. We, too, don't understand what significant changes might mean. But our greatest concern is that this language could be used as a mechanism for those three departments to spend more time to plan for the health insurance exchange, which is considered the heart of the federal health care reform law. So the other part that we're concerned about is the pieces that start at 1.19. By the way, we do like the idea of defined contributions. That's always a good way to start moving because then people have their money and they care about their money. But we are concerned about things like the words of incentives, efficiently, outcomes, just because that's, you know, what kind of incentives could those be? We're concerned about the incentives that there might be now when it comes to doctors providing care according to outcomes, when those outcomes may have nothing to do at all with the doctor but everything to do with the patient. And so, and the last thing I told Representative Dean was the recent state healthcare reform initiatives. And as you heard Mr. Leitz talk about, he considered those to be in 2008, and we did not like them when they were passed in 2008 because that created the database using all of our data that made our data owned by the government for their purposes, their goals. And so this is also a vague piece. We would consider it the 2008 reform. He has just said that he considers it MinCare and GAMC. So there's just a lot of vagueness in here, and I think it's open to interpretation. We believe that it could possibly be used as a mechanism to move forward the exchange. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Braze. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, does anybody else want to testify for or against this bill? Or against? Seeing none, members? Questions, comments? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, I'm just curious why you chose this particular date that you did, December 15th, 2012, because as Representative Huntley was discussing later, I mean, we're expecting perhaps a Supreme Court opinion in June. December 15th will be after the election. You know, I mean, by December 15th, we presumably we would know long before that. I'm just kind of wondering why you're not waiting a little bit longer to perhaps, you know, I don't know, are you thinking it's going to take a long time to do this, or can you just explain what the timing is in your mind?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, the purpose is just to give the departments enough time to complete the work and also give the legislature just a little bit of lead time before coming into January of 13. So it's just the date. That's where the date came from.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, so it seems like you're kind of, this is sort of an assuming that that it's all been changed by that point. You want to know where we should go, I guess. But, you know, unless the Supreme Court overturns it, even if the Republican candidate is elected president, even if we had a complete Republican domination of the federal House and Senate, we're still not going to have the law changed by that point. I guess at least I understand where you're going, at least. Thank you.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just because I think this bill encompasses more than just the state study, because we've talked about, you know, polls, and we've talked about the Congressional Budget Office numbers that you emailed to all the members. I just wanted to put some things into context. I had a chance to take a look at the CBO report, and a few things I want to mention that weren't included in that email is that the CBO estimates that the net cost of the insurance coverage provisions is smaller than estimated in March of 2011, and that gross costs are higher, but offsetting budgetary effects are also higher. And that wasn't included in part of the context. So that's important to notice. But also, Representative Franson mentioned that there was a poll that showed that there's a public support for repeal. Well, a poll was released today, the most recent poll of over 1,400 people, and 53% of people said leave it as is or expand it, and only 38% said repeal it. And since we're sending emails out, I'll make sure all the members have access to that most recent poll, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. I would point out there's a recent a USA Today poll also that shows 72% believe that the individual mandate's unconstitutional. So we can bandy back and forth polls endlessly. So, all right. Nobody else. Very good. And seeing no other testimony, no other comments, I'll renew my motion that House File 1918 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is passed on to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. Thank you, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and particularly Mr. Chen for helping me with this bill. I look forward to any help I could get between now and the next committee, which I know many of you sit on. And I appreciate your time in committee today. I know it's very valuable this deadline week, and I apologize for taking more of your time than I intended to. So thanks and good luck with the rest of your bills.
You're always welcome to committee. Thank you, Representative Dean. Members, just a quick path for the day at the top of your agenda. You will note we're going until 4:15, at which time we have to break for session. We will be coming back at 6:30 this evening to complete our work, so we will go as late as it takes to get the bills done. And we are also going to shuffle the agenda just a little bit. I didn't see Representative Davids in the room, but we do have Representative Holberg with us, so we are going to take up House File 2340. And so I will move House File 2340 that it be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. I believe that's correct.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to go to government operations because of the rulemaking. So if...
Okay, we'll change that motion to re-refer to government operations. Representative Holbert, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, members. And this is a pretty simple bill. It requires the Department of Health to provide for a licensing procedure for facilities that provide 10 or more abortions, and it's pretty simple in that it classifies the data on individuals under Chapter 13 and states that there's no notice for inspection. If we look in the state, we certainly license all kinds of health providers and facilities. We license tattoo parlors, mm-hmm. and some recent news reports would suggest that at least in some places in the country, they're less than optimum conditions. This is a place where there are a large number of procedures that are performed, one of the most common on women. And it's very important that we make sure that these facilities are clean and that the procedures that are being used and followed protect a woman's health. With that, I have Ms. Rao from MCCL who'd like to speak to the bill as well. I'm not aware of any amendments. If that's something that I need to know about, I would like those now. But other than that, I think it's a pretty straightforward bill.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. Ms. Rao, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Rao, and I represent Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, a statewide organization with more than 70,000 member families and more than 200 chapters across the state. Our purpose is devoted to the single issue of protecting innocent and vulnerable human life. Almost 40 years ago, the United States Supreme Court handed down the Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton decisions, which legalized abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. Supporters of these decisions were pleased that women would no longer have to engage in dirty, illegal, and unsafe abortions. So how is it that just last year, a Pennsylvania grand jury report was able to stun our nation, pro-life and pro-choice alike, by shedding light on the dirty, illegal, and unsafe conditions that were happening at a clinic there? According to a description of the grand jury report found on the website of the Office of the District Attorney in Philadelphia, quote, Gosnell staffed his decrepit and unsanitary clinic entirely with unlicensed personnel. Let them practice medicine on unsuspecting patients, unsupervised, and directed them to heavily drug patients in his absence. In addition, he regularly performed abortions beyond the 24-week limit prescribed by law in Pennsylvania. As a result, viable babies were born. Gosnell killed them by plunging scissors into their spinal cords. He taught his staff to do the same. Dirty, illegal, and unsafe. Dr. Gosnell, the owner of the facility, is now in jail, and many of his former staff members have been charged with and pleaded guilty to various crimes as well. Few people, if any, could argue that this is inappropriate. But the question remains, how could this happen? And more significantly, how can we ensure this never happens in Minnesota? To the best of our knowledge, no abortion facilities in Minnesota come anywhere near the dirty, illegal, and unsafe conditions that were found at the clinic in Pennsylvania. But we believe the state should act to ensure that such conditions never do occur in our state. This can be done by providing common sense licensing and inspection standards for Minnesota facilities that provide 10 or more abortions per month. The legislation before you today would require the Department of Health to promulgate rules to make this a reality by setting minimum standards. The state already licenses other similar facilities, including hospitals, outpatient surgical centers, and even more, even facilities that specialize in body art, like tattoos and piercings. Based on data from 2010, this legislation would affect a maximum of just 7 different facilities, which between them perform more than 98% of the more than 11,000 abortions done each year in Minnesota. The purpose of all government regulation is to protect the public by enforcing minimum standards. This legislation asks the Department of Health to determine specifically what these standards would be, with the assumption that the department is more than qualified to draft requirements which would be appropriate when compared to other licensing regulations. To protect the women of the state of Minnesota from the dirty, illegal, and unsafe abortion practices we have seen in other states, we urge you to support House File 2340. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Members, any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, does anybody want to testify for or against this bill in the room? Okay, very good. We have Linnea House on the list. Linnea, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Gottwell and members of the committee. My name is Linnea House, and I'm the Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Minnesota. We are a 50,000-member-strong nonprofit organization in Minnesota working to protect a woman's right to choose in Minnesota. I am here to testify against House File 2340. As you've just heard, we've heard a lot of testimony about the terrible medical practices of Dr. Gosnell in Pennsylvania. Let me be clear, we strongly condemn any physician or healthcare provider who does not follow the law, practices without a license, or endangers patients' health through reckless actions. However, the tragedies in one state should not require laws in another state to be implemented. To begin, abortion is one of the safest medical procedures in the United States. As my colleague just said on this bill, there are no known incidences like this found in Minnesota. In fact, Minnesota annually publishes a report on induced abortions in Minnesota. For 2010, which is the year that we have most data available, the complication rate for abortion was 0.19%, which is an incredibly small rate, making abortion even safer than appendectomies. Abortion care providers in Minnesota are, in fact, regulated. In February, at the request of Senator Hahn, the Commissioner of Health, Ed Ellinger, reported to the Health and Human Services Committee on the current nature of the regulations. Abortion providers are designated as physician clinics and are regulated by physician licensure rules through the Board of Medical Practice. Physician clinics comply with standards set by the College of Laboratory Accreditation, the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, as well as state and local building and fire codes. In addition, all medical professionals are required to maintain professional standards and licenses and complete continuing medical education courses. The reproductive health services provided at clinics are subject to rigorous regulations that are attached to the providers of those services through their licensing boards, in particular the Board of Medical Practice and the Board of Nurses. By treating abortion providers differently from all other comparable medical providers and subjecting it to a unique level of government oversight, this bill segregates abortion providers and their patients from the rest of medical practice and relegates abortion services to a status below other health care. I ask you to vote no on House File 2340, as it is unnecessary and targets one type of health care provider. Regulation of all medical centers that generally protect the health and safety of patients is critical. In contrast, politically motivated regulations are medically unnecessary and inappropriate, putting women at more risk. Laws that target only abortion providers have nothing to do with the safe delivery of services to women and everything to do with the legislators' efforts to restrict access to reproductive services. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howes. Members, any questions to the testifiers? Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a short statement, and that is that it never ceases to amaze me how, you know, we don't like big government, we don't like regulations unless we want something regulated.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hulbert.
If I might, in reading the fiscal note for this bill, the department lays out the things that they would look into. And if you look at what's listed, we have things like infection control, staff qualifications and training, disposing of materials, patients' rights, sanitary environment and reportable diseases, and that they would, on average, take 73 hours to conduct an inspection. I guess the Department of Health feels that there are probably things that aren't being covered that are worth taking a look at.
Thank you, Representative Hulbert. I will ask, is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill, for or against? If so, please make your way towards the testifying table so that we know you're interested. Seeing none, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to request a roll call vote.
Okay, a roll call has been requested on the vote on the bill. Representative Franson, you have the floor.
Is there anyone from the department here?
Anybody from the department? I'm not seeing anybody jumping up, Representative
All right.
Franson.
Well, then I guess I thought that there was some sort of current law already from the 70s on file, but I'm just going to make a statement that Ms. House had made about abortions being the safest medical procedures. Is that what you said, Ms. House? Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to just say that in your opinion, it may be safe, but it certainly is not safe for that unborn child.
Okay, Representative Grinhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg, the testimony seem to imply that we're treating an abortion clinic on these types of inspections differently than other healthcare facilities. Would you care to respond to that or previous testifier?
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen. Certainly other medical facilities are also governed by the whole litany of things that were presented in the opposition testimony, but not by the state. And in the fiscal note, you'll find out that they are basing their numbers on it when they conduct inspections of ambulatory surgical centers. They're using as a comparable. So the statement about it being a status below, right now, we require licensures, like I said, for tattoo parlors, but not state licensure for abortion facilities that, at least in my mind, would be closer to a ambulatory surgical center than a tattoo parlor.
Representative Grenhagen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald?
No comment.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, for one, am really surprised that they're not, because of the nature of the procedure. I mean, this is something that is quite invasive, deals with blood products, often has drugs needed as a part of the procedure, can have serious consequences, health, life-threatening consequences. And so, matter of fact, if I recall right, I think I read that the St. Paul Planned Parenthood had an ambulance call last week or somewhere recently. And so, you know, I'm just kind of surprised that they're not. Something like this certainly should be. And being familiar with JCO and other things that were just inspected like crazy all the time. And matter of fact, you... getting your ears pierced, you have to sign away permission and have all kinds of health issues. So it's just really quite amazing to me. So in your research, Representative Holberg, was there any other sort of health treatment like this going on or procedure being done that didn't have some sort of licensure or inspections?
Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm certainly not the expert in health licensing. I would defer to members on this committee that have a broader range. But from my perspective, if you are licensing hospitals and surgical centers and tattoo parlors, it might make sense to take a look at where this very common procedure, medical procedure, is being conducted to make sure that it meets the same standards as similar other health facilities.
And Mr. Chairman, I just have another question. Yeah, in regards to other states, in regards to this, do you have any knowledge about other states?
Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Rao would be able to give the statistics on the other states. I do not have that statistic.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yes, the same question to the testifier. In regards to our the status of doing this in other states, if there might be any information about other states.
Ms. Rowe, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kiffmeyer. A number of other states do have various types of regulations with abortion facilities. Different states do it in very different ways, so it's hard to quantify specifically. But certainly more than two dozen states have some sort of licensing and or regulation of abortion facilities. It's getting so that's a fairly common thing, and certainly has been upheld by both state and federal courts across the country.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that was enlightening. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Franson.
Majesty.
Okay, Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you to Representative Holberg for sponsoring this bill. I'm very interested in this issue, as you know, and I had a bill that was very similar to this. And the reason that I did it, and we talked about the health care compact yesterday, but I was in Houston at that this summer, and I actually talked to a representative from Kansas who told me about a licensing and regulation bill that they had passed there. And she told me some unbelievably horrific, I wouldn't repeat in this room, stories that testifiers shared at that committee. And it really troubled me, and so I came back home, and I came down here to work, and I decided to do some investigating to see if we had any licensing or regulating going on with abortion clinics. And one of the researchers called the department, and it took quite some time for them to get back to us about this, and that their final answer was, no, we don't do that. And I guess I want to say I'm really disappointed that there's no one from the department here to answer any questions about this. I'm kind of curious about that. But anyway, I guess my question is for Ms. House. I'm just really curious why you would be opposed to ensuring women's safety. Thank you.
Ms. House, welcome
Sorry,
back to the
playing musical chairs here. Representative Lohmer, I'm not against women's safety, but I do believe that they're the physicians that are being licensed, as they are with all healthcare providers. If you go to your family doctor, they are the exact same regulations for those physicians as are being done for abortion providers. And again, I think the complication rates that the statistics that the state of Minnesota is compiling shows that abortion providers are doing their job well, that there are very low complications, and that it is, again, one of the safest procedures in Minnesota.
Representative Lohmer.
Thank you. So I guess I'm confused. You're saying that they are inspecting and regulating right now, the state of Minnesota is doing it?
They are physicians. Excuse me. So they are, they have the exact same regulations as the physician clinic. And so that's how they are being regulated right now.
Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to say the same thing, that the clinics and doctor's offices are not inspected generally, and doctors can perform all kinds of serious surgical procedures in their office. And they are, however, licensed by the medical board, and if they do anything wrong, the medical board will be on their case. The nurses are all licensed by the Nursing Association, and so on. So these people are licensed by the state, but they are not subject to inspections.
Okay, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And okay, question for you, Ms. Howes, trying to just get a better understanding. In your original testimony, you made reference to this bill would, I don't know what the word was that you used, promote or relegate abortion clinics below other similar facilities. And the way I read it, I would think that this would elevate it to the same standards of other facilities where medical procedures are done. And so I guess I'm wondering, was your statement accurate the way I'm remembering it? And two, could you reference then another facility where medical procedures are done where this is not required? I'm trying to follow your line of thinking there in terms of something that would be comparable to an invasive procedure like this where the same standard is not in place.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Ms. House.
Representative Mack. My statement was, I believe that this bill is a bill that directly goes after abortion providers because of the fact that they provide abortions, and I don't believe that we should be restricting and regulating abortion providers solely. I think that there are a number of physicians that perform similar procedures that are not being regularly inspected. So if there's vasectomies that are being done, I think that there's a whole host of similar procedures that are being done. So I think it's setting this one aside because of the fact that they're performing abortions.
Representative Mack. All right, Representative Peterson.
Go
ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, just a follow-up. I appreciate that. I'm not sure that that you answered my question, or maybe you don't know of specific other facilities that could give me a better idea of where this would fall in this whole conversation. But I do think the difference between what Representative Lohmer was referencing, you referenced these physicians are licensed just like physicians are licensed in all various medical avenues. However, a physician being licensed is different than a facility being licensed. A facility being licensed means that the way specimens are handled, the way it's clean, the way things are disinfected, I don't know all the litany of things, but a variety of different things that are all contribute to the health and safety of that environment, the safety of the doctors, mm-hmm. things of that nature. So to say that the physicians are licensed, yes, that's true, but it's obviously quite different for the facility to be licensed as our clinics and our hospitals are, to ensure safety at all levels. And so to me, that's a very large difference between the physician being licensed and the facility being licensed. And I guess I continue to wait to know what this is doing to set it below, to set abortion clinics below other facilities. I don't see that, and that question has yet to be answered for me. If anything, this elevates it to what we expect of other facilities.
So, Representative
Ms. House.
Perhaps I shouldn't have said set below. I just think it sets it aside, so that's creating a completely different statute, basically, because these facilities perform abortions.
Representative Mack, Representative Fritz. I'm sorry, Peterson first, then Fritz.
Well, I'm going to follow up a little bit maybe with Representative Mack's question, and we're all concerned about certainly women's safety, and so I wanted to pursue with Ms. House some of the clinics that I've gone to, and one of them, okay, gastroenterology. Nice clinic, licensed doctors, licensed nurses, they perform gastroenterology procedures, which are invasive, or could be, minor surgery. They give anesthesia. They do other kinds of things. That's one kind of clinic, and I don't know, and I don't know whether they have to be licensed or not. Maybe Representative Huntley can answer that. Another one would be ophthalmology clinics, where sometimes they're allowed to do surgery in the clinic. Again, licensed doctors, nurses, etc. And I don't know if they have to be licensed either. I don't know the answers to these either, so that's why I'm
Representative Peterson. We do have staff here from the Department of Health. If Mr. Koppel, do you have Assistant Commissioner Koppel is here, perhaps could offer a comment on this. Deputy Commissioner, I'm sorry. Deputy Commissioner Koppel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Koppel. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. And I understand there's been some questions as to how, if and how clinics are or aren't regulated in Minnesota. And just to, I can go into some detail, but I'll be short and then open to questions, of course. Number one, Minnesota Department of Health does have the responsibility to inspect licensed hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers, long-term care facilities, nursing homes. We do not have the responsibility to license or inspect medical clinics, which includes facilities that perform abortions. We do not have responsibility to license medical providers, including providers that perform abortions. The whole regulatory scheme for physicians, nurses, other healthcare providers is not through Department of Health licensure, but rather through board certification licensure, such as the Board of Nursing, Board of Medical Practice, etc. There's also accreditation through employers, through health plans that providers must meet. But we have a model in terms of clinics and providers, which is not a department licensure model.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
So following up, let's say a gastroenterology clinic, would that be under the rules of licensure? Where they give anesthesia, they do invasive procedures, etc. Are they licensed or are they strictly?
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe we would not license that clinic. If it was a surgery center, and a definition just for simplicity, and the fact that I'm relatively new to this position, and I have to be kind of simplistic, although I want to be conscientious, and I'll say when I don't know something. But surgery centers are there to do surgery. They do not do any other services. They don't provide primary care. You are through your doctor referred to a surgery center for a surgery. So that's the only thing that occurs there, to be clear, as opposed to a clinic which may do eye care and various things, but may have minor surgery that they perform, and other clinics, which many of which do outpatient surgeries. And if it's anything serious, like I say, or more complicated, they generally get referred to a surgery center. If it's more complicated and requires inpatient, that would be take place in an inpatient facility.
Well, Commissioner Koppel, I think some would argue that an abortion procedure is more akin to a surgical center procedure, and I would also point out that there are other services provided at surgical centers other than invasive procedures. Sinus surgery, for example, an inspection of sinuses without cutting or anything. But Representative Peterson, you have the floor.
Well, no, I think you've answered my question. I was thinking of my ophthalmologist who's done minor surgery, given me anesthetic to do it, and certainly does clinical checkups on eyes, et cetera, too. So, and same with gastroenterology, all those. And I really didn't know whether they were licensed or unlicensed. I think you've made a pretty clear distinction, somewhat clear, between surgery and semi-surgery. But thank you.
Okay, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that point, in the nursing home industry, which is licensed and inspected by the health department, and they are unannounced inspections, and I welcome them, then also the nurse, myself, is also licensed by the Minnesota Board of Nursing. And so I am also, as Representative Kiffner said, shocked that these clinics are not licensed. And I think if we would have had the licensing committee, we may have picked up on this. And in the future, maybe it's an idea to pick up on that licensing committee in the next couple of years and see who isn't licensed and who's doing what in these clinics. But I am very shocked, but I'm very happy, Representative Holbrook, that you brought this forward.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. Representative McElfatrick.
I'm going to pass.
Okay, Representative McDonald, and then Representative Liebling.
Pass.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I'm sure that Representative Holberg, in addition to being concerned about the safety of women who are having abortions, is also concerned about the safety of those who are having eye surgery and colonoscopies and other kinds of invasive procedures. And I'm wondering, Representative Holberg, why you wouldn't want to add those to your bill, since we've heard that those facilities are not licensed either.
Representative Holberg.
Representative Gottwald and Representative Liebling, I'm only going to take on as much as I can take at this time, and the fiscal note is going to provide some challenges, and certainly if you would like to introduce a bill to license those types of centers, you certainly can do that, but I'm not a medical expert. But the range of abortions that are provided, some of them into the third trimester, to me seem more like surgeries than a more invasive type of surgery. So,
Representative Bidling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, then maybe what we ought to do is strike the language here, including non-surgical abortions. Certainly that's not a surgery.
Are you making a motion?
And, Mr. Chair, well, if I decide to do that, I'll do it, but I'm not doing that just yet. But, so, you know, we've got that. Your bill here explicitly covers clinics where there are non-surgical abortions, so I don't think it's just a matter of the surgical risk here. And then if we're going to expend our limited state dollars to inspect facilities, one would think that we would do it where there's the most health risk. And certainly in a colonoscopy situation, there is surgery often going on when polyps are being clipped. And in fact, a person can bleed to death when you have a polyp clipped. You know, I've certainly heard of that happening. It's rare, thank goodness. But you know, there certainly are risks, and certainly when somebody's doing LASIK surgery on your eyes, you're at risk of infection and blindness and cataract surgery, and, you know, I think if we looked at the statistics on where the real health risks are, I think, you know, I don't know if Mr. Koppel knows offhand, you know, not having come prepared for that discussion, but, you know, if we were going to kind of rate the, you know, death per thousand procedures or something, I don't think abortion would be right up there. So I think it's pretty clear. I'm not going to make that motion, Mr. Chair, because I'm not here to fix this bill. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear that this is not about safety. You know, I'd love to have it be about women's safety. We're all about safety for patients, but I don't think this bill is about safety. I think this bill is about trying another route. You know, MCCL is here pushing this bill. This is another route, attempt to, you know, get women to not have the constitutional right that they have right now to have a safe, legal abortion. And, you know, obviously we all know where we fall on that.
Members, I will remind us, especially in this committee, imputing motives is out of order. It just is. Let's stick with the bill. Okay. Members, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me, but I truly have some questions about if we were to license, maybe I shouldn't even be asking this, but if you license these, I mean, these and all the other clinics are going along pretty well right now. All the ones I've talked about, the gastroenterology, all the clinics that are operating, if they were all to be licensed, what does that mean? What would they have to do? Perhaps the Department of Health could tell me.
Commissioner Koppel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, to my knowledge, and understanding, what we would do would be they would need to meet certain requirements, which would be laid out in the rules that would be established as a result of this legislation, and then there would be inspections. How often those inspections occur, et cetera, would also be spelled out in the rules. I would assume that we would follow the same course that we would follow with other things that we license and inspect, such as surgery centers. So that, you know, there would be a system laid out of oversight and licensure.
Representative Peterson.
Okay.
Seeing no further discussion. I'm sorry, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the author, I'm just curious. I see there's no effective date in here. Is that because of the severability clause in subdivision 4? And then also, maybe you mentioned there's no fiscal note, but perhaps, I'm sure that it's nothing new, but maybe the license holder, whoever, the clinics, they can pay for this. They should pay for this as they go. And would that be part of a consideration or not?
Representative Holbert.
And Representative McDonald, I don't know. Maybe I misspoke, but there is a fiscal note. I've been quoting from it. So we do know there's a fiscal note, and we will eventually end up with a trip to Chair Abler's committee as we work our way through the various...
That's why we're going to finance.
...policy committees. And I'm sorry, what was your other question?
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just the there's no effective date that this will take into law. Just wondering, did I miss it, or...
Well,
Representative Holbert.
Certainly we would be happy to have discussions with the Department of Health. We'd want to give them enough time. They'll have to promulgate major rules to the cost of nearly $300,000. So it's probably going to take them a while to do that. We may be able to look at some ways to address that. But certainly Mr. Koppel came at a fast walk, I guess, here. So they haven't approached me to discuss any particulars of this bill yet.
Representative Hosh.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, and I could be wrong on the exact time, but I think if there's no effective date in legislation, the default effective date is August 1st. Is that correct?
I believe you're correct about that. Okay, members, seeing no further discussion, roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Gavalt.
Yes.
Mack.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Allen.
No.
Barrett.
Yes.
Benson.
Yes.
Franzen.
Yes.
Ritz.
Yes.
Grunhagen.
Yes.
Hosh.
Yes.
Huntley.
No.
Giffmeyer.
Yes.
Sleepley?
No.
Elmer?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
McElfetrick?
Yes.
Moran? Murphy?
No.
Norton?
No.
Peterson?
You? Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Quam?
Aye.
It had been 14 ayes and 6 nays. The motion prevails, and House File 2340 is passed and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Thank you, Ms. Holberg. Thank you, testifiers.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg.
That's okay. Mr. Chair and Committee, for your time today.
Members, there have been some questions as to whether or not the DFL was caucusing in this room at 4:15. Apparently, you are not. You'll be over in the Capitol. So we can leave things as they are. You don't have to take your stuff out of here when we come back, just out of convenience. The next bill, we have Representative Davids. Representative Davids, welcome to the committee. Good government all the time, right?
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
All right. I will move that House File 1972 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Davids, to your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. You should have a 0732 amendment to get the bill in shape I'd like. And what we're doing here is hopefully making it so we don't go to finance. But we'll work through this. We're trying to take the costs out of it here in this amendment. So if someone could please move the amendment, and then I've got an...
Okay, I will move the H12-0732 amendment. Representative Davids, briefly on the amendment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what the amendment does is basically take the costs out of it.
Okay. Very good. Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We are on the bill as amended. Representative
Then, Mr. Chairman, if you'd be so kind as to move another oral amendment on page 2, line 2.8, strike the last word shall and replace it with a may. And then line 2.9, delete the word not. And it says assess a fee and then insert there not to exceed $25 for the guest licensure for volunteer services, period. The fee may be paid by the applicant or sponsoring organization. And that's the amendment.
Okay, so after volunteer services, we're inserting...
Okay, after, okay, and 2.8, the board may, delete shall, enter may. 2.9, delete the word not. It would say the board may assess a fee not to exceed $25 annually. Or that's not worded right there. Not to exceed $25. And then after, and then period after services, and then the fee may be paid by the applicant or sponsoring organization.
Okay, let me make sure we got all this. Okay, so on line 2.8, Representative Davids is asking for an oral amendment. We can move the board. We will strike the last word in that line, shall, and insert the word may. On line 2.9, we delete the first word in the line, not. Between the words fee and for, we insert the words not to exceed $25. After volunteer services, there is a period and then a new sentence. The fee may be paid by the applicant or sponsoring organization, period.
That's correct.
Very good. Members, you understand the motion? Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails and the oral amendment to the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I was talking with the author about this, and I think this makes the total cost of the bill in the range of $300, which could be a donation, but it's certainly below the de minimis member of anybody's measurement, so I don't think it has to go to our committee anymore with this amendment on.
Okay.
So, you can just think about that and then change the motion at the end.
Why don't we do that when we take final action on the bill? Very good.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members.
To the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the Dental Mission of Mercy bill, as it's being called. And basically what we're doing is we're saying that dentists from other states that wish to come into Minnesota and provide basically, I guess you'd say, charity care, or care and not charging anything, that they can come in, and there would be a fee of $25. I didn't really want that in there. The board could go up $25. I really didn't want that in there. But they're doing their fiduciary responsibilities, and so they wanted that language in there for they can charge up to $25. But by putting the language, as the oral amendment stated, that could be paid for by a sponsoring organization. Now, I've offered to pay for it myself, but because if you think of what we're trying to do here, we're saying that there's a real problem in Minnesota with folks not being able to get dental care. And if we have dentists from outstate willing to come in to provide care for free to folks, I didn't really want to charge them anything. But the Board of Dentistry does make an argument that they, you know, would have some minor expenses here. We're looking at $25, maybe 10 to 12 people this would apply to per year. And by the language we changed there, the fee may be paid for by the applicant. I really don't want to charge the applicant because he or she's the ones doing the work. But the sponsoring organization, so the Minnesota Dental Association would be able then, or other organizations would be able to cover the costs. So that they would not have to pay anything to come in and donate their time to help folks that need dental care. So that's what the bill does. I have with me today Laura Kramer, Director of Governmental Affairs of the Minnesota Dental Association. Then I believe the Board of Dentistry would like to come down and tell us of their support for the bill.
Very good. Ms. Kramer, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Laura Kramer. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Dental Association. On behalf of the MDA, I'm speaking in support of House File 1972 as amended. The MDA is planning an event in August called the Mission of Mercy. And it's a four-day event, but it's 2 days of care that are going to be provided on a first-come, first-served basis to children and adults that come to the Verizon Center. The intention is that we're going to provide about $1 million of free care to nearly 2,000 Minnesotans who live not only in the Mankato area, but we anticipate this will draw people from a wide area. This is our first one. We're hoping to do a Mission of Mercy next year in Bemidji and continue each year. So how this works is a large temporary clinic is going to be set up, and we kind of work through a triage system where the individuals are triaged and then sent to the appropriate place for care. So we'll be doing cleanings, fillings, extractions, there'll be partial crowns, and there'll be some prosthetic appliance work done as well. So this isn't just a cleaning clinic. There's going to be a lot of work done here. And in order to provide all this care, the MDA is going to rely on the volunteer efforts of nearly 1,000 people. So this includes dentists, dental hygienists, dental assistants, and community members as well. So you'll all be welcome to participate and volunteer with us. These events occur across the country in nearly 20 states. As Representative Davids mentioned, out-of-state dentists do participate. They participate to provide care, and they also participate to provide guidance. If they've done one of these events in the past, this is Minnesota's first, so they'll be there to help orchestrate it, and then there will also be dentists there who are learning how to do an event for their own state. In order to accommodate them to come into Minnesota and to practice, House File 1972 will give them a temporary guest license, and we anticipate this will be about 10 to 12 dentists. It will apply to dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants who are licensed and in good standing, and they'll check out with the board. It's going to be valid for a period of 10 days as opposed to a regular guest license that would be valid for a year. We think 10 days is appropriate because perhaps someday in the future we'll be able to do more than one of these in a year, and we want the applicant to only have to apply once for this guest license. The amendment that Representative Davids offered does now include a fee. Because these dentists are coming from out of state, they're paying their travel expenses, they're closing their practices down to come and provide care to Minnesotans, The MDA will be working with our donors to cover the costs of this, of the fee that will be associated with that. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Members, any questions to the testifier? Otherwise, we have Marshall Schrag. I'm sorry, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a great bill, great idea. I just, as I'm looking at the language of it, and I know we have this delete all amendment. So, and with the 10 days, I saw in the original bill it said 10 days, but on this bill, on the amendment on line 2.8, it says for a limited period of time, and maybe I see now. It says lower down, it says not to exceed 10 days. Okay. But I was just wondering on that language, for a limited period of time. That's a pretty nonspecific term, and I just wondered if that is written the way it should be written.
Representative Davids?
I have no clue. Yeah, why don't you come up here? Because I, Mr. Chairman, members, it says for a limited period of time, and then it, thank you, Mr. Chairman, then it does on 2.18 talk about that limit of time, and I think those two go together. But I've got Mr. Dominic Spazzetto here.
Mr. Chairman, Dominic Spazzetto,
welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm a lobbyist working with the Minnesota Dental Association. I think the reason that the language about the limited period of time is in this is to differentiate this from the normal guest license, which is basically an annual license, and we want to suggest that this is a temporary license, and therefore it has the reduced fees, and it has obviously a much lower threshold for the applicant to come here. So, and again, we are limiting it to 10 days, so it is a limited period of time. That's the reason it's there. Thank you.
Representative Liebling? Okay, very good. Marshall Schrag is here. Mr. Schrag, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Marshall Schrag, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. I had actually a significant amount of testimony prepared, but based upon the amendments as they've been adopted by the committee, all I need to say is that the board thinks that this is a good idea and it's done the right way. Representative Abler alluded to as far as the fiscal note, you may have seen a fiscal note for quite a significant amount of money, and as he suggested, that would no longer be necessary the way that this is structured. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Schrag, and thank you for your work on this. Members, any questions to the testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one more testifier.
Dr. Lynn, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name for the record and who you represent, and then proceed.
I'm Joe Lally. I'm Vice President of Government Relations at Delta Dental of Minnesota. And while Delta Dental and the Dental Association don't have a history of always getting along on every issue, we are looking for more ways to have common ground, and we're working together with the Dental Association on this Mission of Mercy in Mankato for August. We're the lead donor, title donor of the event. We gave $150,000 just yesterday evening. With a big check and everything at the Dental Association. So we're happy to not only support it in terms of our financial donation underwriting the event, but also in terms of supporting this legislation, which permits volunteer dentists to come to Minnesota to help with access issues. We also will be having more than 50 employees of Delta Dental in Mankato this summer doing whatever we're told to do to help with logistics and that kind of thing. So we're supportive of the event, and we're supportive of the legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Lind. Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, this is a really good bill because, as you heard Mr. Lilly say, we're going to have the dentist telling Delta Dental what to do for 4 days. No, in all seriousness, I thank Delta Dental for their participation. It's a very good thing.
We have one question. Representative Necropatrick, do you want to wait till after the testifier? Or?
Yes, I'll wait.
Okay, very good. And Representative Huntley?
Just a comment.
You want to get in line? Okay,
sure.
Go for
maybe
it.
Maybe sometime in the future we should consider a mission of mercy to make peace between the Dental Association and Delta Dental.
I'll join that mission. Thanks, Representative Huntley. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chairman. I'm David Lindy. I'm the President of the Board of Dentistry. And I just wanted to enthusiastically endorse this Mission of Mercy project. We have worked quite hard with the Minnesota Dental Association to resolve any little fine details and differences we've had, and we just want to encourage you to approve that. Thank you for your kind consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your help. I think I mixed you up with the last testifier. I apologize for that. Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's almost superfluous to make a comment on this because it's been, promoted so well. But I would like to say that even the dentists up on the Iron Range are talking about this event, and they've lobbied me very hard for this bill. I think this is excellent. They're very excited about it, and other corner of the state.
Very good. Thank you, Representative McElfatrick. Any other comments, questions? Anybody else who wants to testify for or against this bill? See no further comments. I'm going to renew my motion, or actually modify my motion, that House File... Well, no. It's going to end up being the same motion, I guess. That House File 1972 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance, as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is passed on to the Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative
Davis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you to testifiers. Okay, members, quickly, if you look at your agenda, we'll hop down to the bottom. Just a few notes on House File 926, which I'm chief authoring. It was heard and passed in our committee last session. It was sent to the General Register and returned to the committee via House Rule 4.20. There is a fiscal note. It needs to be re-referred to Health and Human Services Finance. We do have copies of the bill if members would like a copy. And... the bill directs the Department of Commerce to evaluate state health mandates. So that's just a note on that. It's been brought back to our committee. We're going to re-refer it to Health and Human Services Finance.
Yes.
And again, if you want copies of the bill, we can do that. Next up, we're going to have Representative Lohmer's bill, House File 1492. Okay, the bill is being handed out right now, members, so we won't get started till we have it. And we'll give you a chance to pull it out and look at it, too, so we're all set to go. Representative Lohmer, maybe while we're handing it out, Representative Lohmer makes a motion that House File 1492 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Lohmer, I think we all have it now, and so to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before we start, I have a small oral amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Very good. State your oral amendment.
Okay, on page 1, line 8, delete the number 30 and insert 31. And this will reflect the intent of the bill.
Okay, members, Representative Lohmer moves that on line 1.8 of the bill, we strike the number 30 and insert the number 31. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails and the oral amendment is adopted. Representative Lohmer, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1492 comes before you today as a request of the Minnesota Association of Marriage and Family Therapy and their 1,900 members statewide. Marriage and family therapists are requesting a seat on the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health. The State Advisory Council on Mental Health was established in the Comprehensive Adult and Children's Mental Health Acts of 1987 and 89. The Council provides advice and recommendations to the Governor, Legislature, and state agencies on policies affecting people with mental illness and children with emotional disturbances. All council members are appointed by the governor and serve four-year terms. Marriage and family therapists are one of the core mental health disciplines practicing in our communities across the state. Marriage and family therapists treat a wide variety of clients from a relationship perspective that incorporates family systems. They are trained and licensed to work with individuals, couples, and families. They provide valuable services to a wide variety of Minnesotans, including veterans and their families. So I have with me today Mr. Henry Erdman, who represents the practicing marriage and family therapists, to answer any questions.
Mr. Erdman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Henry Erdman, for the record, on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. We'd like to thank the chairman for hearing this bill today and Representative Lohmer for bringing it forward. We think it's a common sense initiative that'll bring another voice to the table as we debate mental health policy in the state of Minnesota. Let me answer any questions available. Thanks.
Members, questions or comments? Anybody else who wants to testify for or against the bill, first of all? Anybody for or against the bill? See none. Representative Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you, Representative Lohmer. As a member of the State Advisory Council on Mental Health, I'd just like to give you my full support for your bill, and we'll be voting for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Members, see no further discussion, comments, questions, concerns. We'll act on the bill. Representative Lohmer renews her motion that House File 1492 be recommended pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is passed to Government Operations. Thank you, Representative Lohmer, and thanks to your testifier.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to take one more action quick before we leave. I mentioned earlier House File 926 passed through this committee before, was returned because of the change in sessions. I'm now going to make a motion to move it to House and Health and Human Services Finance. Any questions about that motion at all at this point? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 926 is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. With that, members, we are going to break just a little bit early to go to caucus and then to floor. We will be back here at 6:30 to finish up our agenda. So with that, we are in recess until 6:30.
All this meeting of Health and Human Service Reform back into order, reconvened. And Representative Gottwalt, you have a bill. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2379 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And, Madam Chair, we have the A1 amendment, and then we have a couple of oral amendments just to correct a couple of little things.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, I hope you're ready to present the second bill tonight.
So Representative Gottwalt would like to move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the order that he would like to have it.
Yeah. Okay, Madam Chair, we're going to do the oral amendments on the A1, and then we'll be done with it.
Okay,
so,
that'll be fine.
Ms. Abner Holden here is going to help walk me through the oral amendments.
We are now in
we're out
official.
Of recess.
We're out of recess. Okay. So,
Madam Chair, members, Sue Abner Holden, now in Minnesota. So the first amendment would be on line 1.10. Adding the sentence, this certification is voluntary for license holders. So everyone knows they don't have to do it.
Okay, does that go in between the period and the?
After B.
Okay, very good. So between the period and the in the middle of that line, 1.10, we move to include the language Ms. Abderholden just quoted. Why don't you say it again?
Just say it again, please.
Yes, this certification is voluntary for license holders.
Okay, and then we have one other that we'll incorporate into this oral amendment.
And the other one, Madam Chair, is on line 2.4, striking C, the commissioner shall develop certification requirements, because we just put them into the statute, so we don't need that sentence. And then just renumbering, or relettering, I guess, would be.
Okay, so striking line 2.4 and renumbering or relettering accordingly.
Okay, and if I could just repeat those to make sure I have them correct. On line 1.10, Representative Gottwald is adding after the period, This certification is voluntary for license holders, period. And on line 2.4, striking C and the entirety of the language on that line and renumbering
accordingly.
Accordingly.
Yes.
Sound good? Okay. That would be my motion.
Okay. Yes, I was wondering about if we had a quorum, but we had one established prior. So all those in favor of the amendment as just read, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The amendment.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
It's a good thing I like this bill because I could lay it on the table practically by myself.
That's true. And Representative
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, we were hoping on your goodwill.
We've adopted the oral amendment, and now we need to adopt the A1 as amended. Is there any other discussion prior to doing that? Okay. If all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 As amended. Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes. And now you have the bill in the order that you'd like to, I think, explain it to the committee, and it's House File 2379.
Very good, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. This is, you know, we're in the Reform Committee, and this is a great idea that's been brought forward by NAMI. And I would like to turn it over to Sue here in just a moment, but I do want to thank her for her cooperation on this and for helping bring this idea forward, this flexibility to do a better job for people with mental illness is very welcome in our committee.
Ms. Abderholden.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thanks to Representative Gottwell for carrying the bill. It just kind of addresses two issues. One is the quality of corporate foster care that programs that serve people with a mental illness. This is, again, a voluntary certification. A provider can come forward and say, yes, we have staff trained in these areas. We're making sure that people have access to either a mental health professional or a mental health practitioner. We want to make sure that both the home and the individual has a mental health crisis plan, so we know what's going to happen if someone has a mental health crisis. So I think, and we have worked with everyone, the licensing department, ARM, everyone is singing kumbaya on that language. And then on the second part, if you remember last session, whenever someone moves out, the bed closes. And, of course, that's a problem for people who live with a mental illness because they actually get better, and then they move out. And so we felt that it kind of disproportionately hit people with a mental illness. It is in the governor's supplemental budget to also kind of address this bed closure issue, but we just kind of want to keep it out there in front of you all that, you know, if we have a home that actually is either meets the certification or at least until we get the certification, they're connected with a mental health provider. Clearly, they've got access to mental health professionals, and we all know that we need a lot more housing and options for people with a mental illness, and so it would just kind of keep them safe. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Does anyone on the committee, those here, have any questions? And can I ask a question of you, Ms. Abderholden? Is this the same language that was in the ARM bill that we heard in this committee a week ago?
Madam Chair, it's actually the amendment changes it.
Okay.
It also gets rid of the fiscal note for that particular piece of it, because otherwise the department was going to have to go off and, you know, create a mini rule and a mini certification. So since everyone, we've been working with people since the fall,
right.
Since we kind of all agreed to this, we just went ahead and amended it. And the amendment to the ARM bill did not carry the second piece, which was the bed closure.
Okay. Thank you for that. Anyone else have questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Abderholden, just so I understand fully what's going on here, so is there going to be a fiscal note on the changes to the bed closure piece?
There is a fiscal note.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, most likely on the second part for the bed closure, we don't know what that would be because, of course, I can never get one before before it starts going through your committee, but there will probably be a small one.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's the reason we're moving to finance. Yep.
And I failed to mention that at the beginning of the committee, but this bill will be moving to Health and Human Service Finance. Are there any other questions?
Ready to vote.
Is there anyone that would like to testify in support of or in opposition to the bill? Seeing Seeing none, I think we're ready for the question. Representative Gottwalt, would you?
I'll renew my motion that House File 2379 be recommended pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance, as amended.
As amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the bill carries. Good luck.
Thank you.
We do have another bill up, and I think we'll hand the gavel over to the chair. How controversial is it?
Hi. Sure, not a problem.
Uh-oh. All right. Nope, I don't. Next up is House File 2041. And it will be, it's an abler bill, but we have Representative Liebling here in his stead. And it is going to go to public safety. So, Representative Liebling, would you
right.
like to?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And members, obviously, this is Representative Abler's bill, and I'm just here to introduce it. This is the bill for the Board of Dentistry, kind of their cleanup bill. Policy bill, and Mr. Schrag is going to explain the bill and walk us through it.
Mr. Schrag.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abling, thank you very much for introducing this and for your authorship as well, along with Representative Abler and Kiffmeyer. The bill was introduced last year and does a number of things. There are some housekeeping cleanup issues, and there are also a couple of policy issues. The bill also includes some fee modifications. Those fee modifications, as I'll address in my testimony as I go through the provisions, actually were accommodated last year and were passed into law. So I'll make note of those and have you consider an oral amendment to delete those sections that have already been passed, or to consider an amendment prior to it going to the Public Safety Committee.
And Mr. Schrag, could I have clarification on that? They've already passed this year?
They did pass in the 2011 session.
Okay.
So they were introduced as along with in Senate File 775, which had those provisions in it, and they ended up going to the omnibus bill, those the financial portions of that.
Okay, and perhaps Ms. Aves, you can give some instruction about how we should handle that.
Madam Chair, sections 7 through 12 can be deleted.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would move to delete sections 7 through 12.
That's great. Section 7 through 12 will be deleted, and that's 6.15. Through 8.6.
Correct.
And is there anyone, any more comments on that, or we can just take care of that business right now? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment passes, and you can go to the.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Marshall Schrag. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry, and we're the state agency responsible for regulating nearly 17,000 dental professionals in the state. As I indicated, there are a number of provisions within this bill, and I will walk you through those so that you understand the context behind them. In Section 1 on line 2.10, that corrects the name of the testing institution to the National Board Dental Examinations. It's worked as it is, but as long as we have an opportunity to clean that up, we'd prefer to do that. Section 2, which is lines 3.5 and 3.6, and also 3.11 and 3.13, also corrects the same name of the institution and also clarifies our process for addressing those examinations. Section 3, which is line 3.29, also clarifies the process that indicates that all components of the National Board Dental Examinations must have been passed, and then renumbers the other requirements. Section 4, lines 4.19 to 4.26, removes the term registration, as all dental professionals now are licensed, not registered, and allows the board to create a small-sized license and a renewal certificate for display at non-primary practice sites. which simplifies compliance by licensees so that the public is still informed about the credential status of the dental professionals, but addresses the challenges of transporting and displaying multiple large licenses. That would apply to the type of event that we discussed earlier today, the Mission of Mercy volunteer event that will be happening in Mankato, where volunteer dental professionals from throughout the state would ordinarily have to bring their large license with them. And this, we intend to be ready for that event by programming our system to be able to produce a small license type. Section 5, which is lines 4.31 to 6.6, currently applicants for dental licensure must self-disclose whether they have ever been convicted of or have a pending issue that would result in a felony, gross misdemeanor, or misdemeanor. Such a conviction does not preclude the individual from licensure, but may initiate a process whereby we utilize additional review and considerations, including referral to the Health Professional Services Program, HPSP, in many cases, actually in most cases. Self-disclosure does not provide as fair a process as a required background check would, as it could and has allowed applicants to become licensed deceptively. Criminal background checks ensure that the appropriate protections may be considered on a case-by-case basis for each applicant with full knowledge of the applicant's background by the board. Section 6, which is lines 6.10 to 6.12, establishes a requirement that licensees provide the board with an email address. Use of email is effective and cost-effective, and email accounts are held by most licensees and are available at no cost for those who do not yet use email. And email addresses would be considered private, non-public data. As you addressed with your amendment, sections 7 through 12 have been deleted. Section 13, lines 8.12 to 8.13, corrects the classification again of dental assistant regulation as being licensed, not registered. Section 14, line 8.26, clarifies that the complete application for advanced dental therapy certification does include a fee. And section 15, finally, lines 8.32 to 9.9, the modification there provides immunity from liability for board consultants who would be acting on behalf of the board. This provision, we believe, is necessary to enable the board to solicit and retain consultants, especially when they find that their dental practice liability coverage does not extend to board work. So thank you for your consideration of these changes, and I would welcome any questions.
Thank you. Representative Gottwalt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly, there is peace in the valley on all these provisions, correct?
Peace in the valley as far as any dental associations that that the board works with? Yes, there is.
Okay, very good.
Anyone else have any questions? I do think this section with the small displayed license could actually be useful in some of our clinics where volunteers come in and provide service as well. So I think that'll have multiple uses. It's a nice idea.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree, the board has agreed that typically that is not something that that our professionals have been compliant with. And I think that they've indicated that they're not compliant because of how difficult it is to transport and unyieldy it is to transport the large, usually framed licenses. So,
yeah,
this will still protect the public by letting them know that the providers are credentialed and who they are, so that if they do have an issue, they can know who to contact the board with regard to.
Thank you, Representative Liebling.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I just wanted to say that, you know, while I'm often kind of vigilant about criminalizing things and additional layers of, you know, preventing people from doing certain things if they have past convictions, this one makes a whole lot of sense because, you know, we're very vigilant in the healthcare field. We have, you know, we DHS keeps careful track of certain kinds of convictions and so on. And here, and for dentists, we've had only voluntary reporting. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, dentists are so often with vulnerable patients in situations where, mm-hmm. you know, where harm can be done. So the very idea that we haven't been doing this, I don't know, you know, this is kind of long overdue to correct this.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone from the audience that cares to step forward to testify in support of or against the bill?
Madam Chair, if I might just add to, with regard to what Representative Gottwald asked as far as peace in the valley, I do want to indicate that there are other bills that are that probably will be heard by this committee or the other health committee. And I know the Board of Nursing is also pursuing a criminal background check. And the Representative Kiffmeyer out of the Sunset Review Commission has also got some provisions in there for criminal background checks. This is a model that we think will work for the Board of Dentistry. And, again, it does provide an opportunity to look at issues on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you, Representative Cotwell.
And, Madam Chair, not to delay things any further, I think, and it's probably not for this time, but we are adding criminal background checks to so many things, and appropriately so. I do sometimes wonder if we don't need to check in with public safety, what their capacity is. I assume it's an electronic background check of some kind, but it seems like background checks, the need for them and the demand for them has just exploded. So I don't really want to tie us up on this bill with that, but that's a point of interest for the future.
And Representative Gottwald, this bill will go to public safety, so perhaps Representative Liebling and others can raise that issue for a further discussion.
I'm not on public safety.
Representative Abler. All right. Seeing no other questions, Representative Liebling, would you like to renew your motion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 2041 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
As amended. Passed as amended.
As amended.
All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? The bill
Thank
passes.
You very much.
Motion prevails. Motion prevails. You like that better? Representative Cotwell, do you have some comments to?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I could real quick. Tuesday, March 20th is going to be another one of our late nights, but maybe not. It all depends on how things go. We'll start at 2:30, but the committee will be meeting past 4:15, and we may be meeting into the evening. So just, you know, you might not want to make permanent plans for Tuesday night at this point. So we'll see how things go, but that's just a little bit of a heads up for Tuesday, March 20th.
All right. Thank you. With that, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.